This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. On Monday, Israel launched a strike against an expanded set of targets across Iran. This comes after a U.S. airstrike on Iran ordered by President Trump over the weekend. I'm joined in this recorded interview by U.S. Representative Greg Landsman, a Democrat representing Ohio's 1st Congressional District, to discuss the airstrikes and the recent fatal shooting of a Minnesota lawmaker. Welcome back, Congressman Landsman.
Well, thanks for having me.
We appreciate your being here. We're recording this Monday morning. The U.S. launched these airstrikes on Iran over the weekend. You back the Trump administration's decision?
I would have made the same decision, is the way I would have put it. And look, it's scary stuff. I mean, you know, on one hand, we don't know what Iran will do. On the other hand, the vast majority of Americans, I think like 80%, agree that Iran cannot have a nuclear weapon, and every indication suggests that that's where they were headed. And the fact that these enrichment sites are so heavily fortified, just underscores that their intention, and they've been very clear that they want to annihilate Israel, and they call Israel Little Satan and the United States Big Satan. So we would be next, and you know, if you can get out in front of Iran getting that weapon, you do. And obviously, diplomacy is your first choice, and that's been tried. This was a unique opportunity because for the first time that I can remember, the air defenses in Iran were destroyed. And so it was clear airs in the sense that our pilots had the ability to get in and get out. And it's not clear what kind of damage they did. Hopefully they destroyed the enrichment efforts, if not diminished it significantly. My hope is that this leads to Iran saying, okay, we will agree to ending our non-civil enrichment program. They should have a civilian program, I mean, you know, for energy's sake. And they need to remove all of the enriched uranium out of Iran and do that with inspectors, and to have, you know, round the clock inspections. They also need to dismantle the terror armies. They are the reason why Hezbollah exists and why Lebanon can't be free. They're the reason why Hamas exists and why Palestinians in Gaza have had such a horrific, I mean, obviously Israel's war has been awful. But before that, you know, for Gazans under Hamas, it's been terrible for 15 years. And the same with the Houthis. So, you know, getting Iran marginalized and out of the terror game sets the Middle East on a path to peace. And that's what I want. I don't want war. I want peace. And I believe this is a defensive, preemptive, very targeted strike that could, not will, because we don't know, could put us on the path to an actual peace in the Middle East. I would have consulted the key members of Congress, both Democrats and Republicans. The president failed to do that. He called some Republicans. This has to be bipartisan. And I would be building the broadest coalition possible to get to peace. And he's not doing that.
Well, because others in your party have called these airstrikes unconstitutional. What do you think?
Yeah, so that would mean that any strike, like the strike on the Houthis a couple months ago would have been unconstitutional. And there's a reason why, you know, if we're going to war and we're going to declare war, that's Congress. That's what the Constitution says. But if you are doing things to prevent war or to protect Americans abroad or here, then that is something that the commander in chief does. All presidents have done this, Republican and Democratic, in part because you can't put a lot of this out in the open. In fact, when the Houthis were attacked, the big challenge was that Pete Hegseth, discussed war plans on a Signal chat. And we all were up in arms for good reason, because you can't do that. And so you can't have a big public debate and vote in the United States Congress if you're trying to execute a stealth mission, which this was.
You just said your hope is that this is a path to peace, but there have been others who have raised concerns that this could lead to a broader war in the Middle East.
Yeah, I mean, no one knows what's going to happen, and it is a gamble. It's a gamble, to be clear. Leaving the enrichment program in place is a bigger gamble, because that leads to a catastrophic event, and then the whole world is in this war. And the amount of carnage would be, it's just unthinkable. So yes, I mean, I hope not. I mean, they've been diminished pretty significantly over the last couple of weeks. You know, air defenses. You know, Israel has been strategically making its way around Iran to destroy other key military sites, and so they're. They're not at full strength. That doesn't mean that they couldn't try to cut off the movement of oil, but that would bring in other Gulf states in a way where they would be very, very angry. You know, the Saudis and others, the Emiratis, Bahrain, all the folks, Jordan, they're all cheering this on. They don't want war either. They want this to end. They want Iran's chaos to end, because that allows them to build a new Middle East. That's what these leaders want.
I'm talking in this recorded interview with Congressman Greg Landsman. Congressman Landsman, talk about how you learned that your name was found in evidence that's been linked to a man accused of killing a Minnesota state lawmaker and her husband and severely wounding another lawmaker and his wife.
We got a call Sunday morning that our name was on the list, and then, you know, that triggered immediate additional security, you know, police at the house doing, you know, walking around the perimeter of the home every 20, 30 minutes, which is jarring in and of itself. And then, you know, it got strange. You know, I sort of tried to get everyone to leave the house, so it was just me. And around 9 p.m., started getting dark, and one of the officers outside said, "Sir, can you," texted me and said, "Sir, can you turn your lights off inside and turn your lights on outside?" And I walked around the house and did that. And all of a sudden, your home is like, you know, the floodlights are on in the back and the front and the sides, and it's dark inside. And I thought, well, maybe this guy somehow drove from Minnesota here. And of course he didn't, but you know, you don't know. And by, I think, 10:30, so it was just about 12 hours, they caught him. Yeah, we'll sort out, hopefully, why my name was on that list and if it was just random or a one-off. But we've gotten a lot of threats. I mean, political violence and the threats to elected officials is, you know, at a historic high. We get a lot, you know, because I'm outspoken and I'm a Jewish member of Congress. People slept outside my house for days. And so, you know, we're pretty careful. And I mean, I try to be careful with my rhetoric and then also with security, because it's not just me as somebody, and it's not just my family. If I'm out and something happens, that affects other people. And so we take the precautions necessary to try to keep everyone safe.
You said Sunday, that was Father's Day Sunday, right?
Yeah, it was probably my least favorite Father's Day.
But, I bet.
But I got to spend some time with my kids and my wife. So it was fine. It didn't get weird until he sent that text, which is of course just a precautionary thing. I just didn't know. He didn't say, "Hey, this is just precautionary." And I, big shout out to the, you know, CPD. They have been so good, and they're so easy to work with, and I really love them all. And they're just you're glad you live in a place where you have it's not a perfect, no department's perfect. I'm not perfect, but it is one of the best police departments in the country.
You know, you mentioned you got the rest of your family out of the house in pretty short order. What was your immediate gut reaction when you got that notification that your name's on this list?
Just bewilderment. Why would my name be on there? I mean, this is a guy in Minnesota. I mean, you know, I first thought, well, maybe it's, you know, because, you know, the anti-Semitism, the violence against Jews is obviously pretty high. Or, you know, several Jews have been killed. And one is fighting for her life, I believe, still, because she was, you know, firebombed. So, you know, was it because I'm Jewish? And then you just stop wondering and you just sort of lock in and get the security and then just kind of wait.
How are you and your family holding up?
We're fine, thank you. I mean, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, I think you can either decide, hey, this isn't for me, or I'm going to double down and just get as much done and be as good to people and as positive of an influence on politics as humanly possible. And I choose the latter. I mean, we're all in. I mean, so is my family. This is one of those moments in American history where, you know, people with kindness and strength and empathy have to prevail. I mean, you know, because we got to get out of this. Yeah. And I want to be part of that, getting out of it.
You told the New York Times that you're kind of haunted by the thought that you could be shot and killed.
Yeah, I mean, some of that's just me being Jewish, you know, right? Like, just like a parrot. But I was out about a month or so ago, and we decided not to get security because it wasn't my event. And it just kind of sank in, and I was in this very open space, and I had a very vivid image. I won't go into the image, but that image is sitting with me and will sit with me. And, you know, and it's not so outrageous considering that this is happening to either elected officials or Jews. So, you know, I make sure every room I walk into, I know exactly where the exits are. I try to keep my back against a wall, essentially. I want to make sure that I can see everything. But, you know, it can't dissuade you from, one, doing your job, which for me is being a really good parent, a really good husband, and a really good member of Congress. And it can't dissuade you from public service if that's in your core, and it's in my core.
So when you say part of that's you being Jewish, you mean because Jewish people are being targeted?
No, I mean because we're neurotic. I mean, you know, like I always say, the most Jewish thing about me is how neurotic I am and my stomach. I have a very Jewish stomach. I like can eat five things, but and because we're being targeted. But no, I meant just because, like, you know, we worry. We're worriers.
This violence, this political violence, it's happening to Democrats, it's happening to Republicans. I mean, President Trump was the target of a couple of assassination attempts during the presidential campaign. What do you think is behind it? What do you think's going on?
I mean, I think it's a combination of you know, really bad political actors who, you know, aren't at all careful with their language. And, you know, Trump is the president of the United States and was the president of the United States and was the nominee. I mean, he has more power to change the way we talk than most. And he's been divisive, you know, and I'm not putting this on him. I'm just saying, like, I try to be very careful. Everyone has to be very careful. It will be great to have a president, Democrat or Republican, who brings us together, that reminds us that we are in this together, that we disagree about, you know, lots of things, but we have to be kind and decent and lift one another up and, you know, and fight for the things that we believe in with conviction, but not fight with each other. And that will be helpful. It is also true that we're living in a time where social media is driving so much of this. And so I sent a letter to the president, you know, and I've said this publicly, but, you know, you never know what happens with a letter. Maybe he reads it. Maybe somebody on the staff reads it. Like, get the CEOs of the social media companies, they're all his buddies, and say, look, you know, we're going to get some of this stuff off your platforms. And, you know, we'll protect free speech, even though these are private platforms and you can decide what's on there. But we are going to monitor this and get some of this junk off of the social media platforms. And there are hundreds. It's not just a couple. I mean, there's so many. And to set up, either with Capitol Police or, you know, somewhere else in government, an agency that's focused entirely on monitoring these threats so that we can get out in front of them, go visit some folks and just say, hey, you're raising some flags here. And we don't have that capacity on Capitol Hill. So that's one thing. I'm, in addition to pushing on Congress and the president to fix what's happening on social media, we also need a center. And communities have this. We have this here in Cincinnati, where data comes into one place, and that data is analyzed and given to law enforcement in a way that speeds up these investigations and gets in front of violence.
You know, we were talking about anti-Semitism before, and I've read articles and studies that have linked this political violence to anti-Semitism. What do you think? Do you think there's a connection there?
I mean, I don't know about the Minnesota case. I certainly don't know about the Trump assassination attempts. But obviously, the other, you know, what happened in Colorado, what happened in D.C., that was anti-Semitic violence. And you know, if I've studied the history of anti-Semitism, I have a master's in theological studies, studied Jewish history, Christian history, Muslim history. But anti-Semitism is unique in that it doesn't play out the same way as other forms of hate. It's other forms of hate are just as awful. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it's not like one's worse. It's just anti-Semitism sort of breeds under the surface, and then once it pops, it becomes deadly. It goes from zero to your shot, zero to a gas chamber. I mean, it doesn't have this slow burn, you know, where people are out there that they'll say terrible things, but it's a quiet thing, and then all of a sudden, Jews are not welcome. Jews aren't wanted. Jews are removed. Jews are killed.
So, what do you think could help lower the political temperature and reduce this political violence?
Every elected official has to, be very intentional about their words. And, you know, somebody like Mike Lee, who, you know, posted such an outrageous, you know, inflammatory set of things after this awful murder in Minnesota. I like the fact that the two senators from Minnesota, Amy Klobuchar and Tina, I would just call her Tina. Anyways, Amy and Tina. They went over to Mike Lee and said, just like, what are you doing? This was our friend. And he took it down. Still, I mean, I do think Trump has to, he's got to get his act together on this. He probably won't, but I do hope and pray that like Trump wakes up, you know, tomorrow and just says, you know what? I can be strong and kind. And that Mike Lee decides, you know what? I can be strong and kind. Empathy and strength go hand in hand. And I need all of our political leaders to embrace their empathy and their strength. Don't, enough of this. I mean, it's just, they have to be done. But a lot of this, the radicalization happens on the internet. So Congress has to act. The president could. I mean, the president could do this. But ultimately, it has to be law. And I'm a big believer that the biggest change is that these entities you should be able to sue them. And right now, there's a liability shield, which is insane, as if they're not doing anything wrong. And if they're not doing anything wrong, why do you need a liability shield? It's the same thing with gun manufacturers. Those are the two entities you can't sue. It's wrong.
Well, do you have any hope that Democratic and Republican leaders will come together to denounce this kind of violence, either in joint statements or joint appearances? Do you think that would have an impact?
It would have an impact. And we do have to get back to that place. I mean, what I hope emerges after Trump is a set of candidates on both sides that just say, we are going to meet Americans where they are in the economy. We're going to fix this thing. We're going to fix the tax code. We're going to start empowering and rewarding hard work and not just wealth. That we're going to get serious about immigration reform and border security. We're going to do it together. We're going to build so much housing. You know, we're going to get rid of the red tape. We're going to we're going to really do, and we're going to go back to the days of people working together across the aisle. We're going to make that our thing. And it starts from the top, because if the Senate Majority Leader says, the assignment is bipartisan. If the Speaker of the House says the assignment's bipartisan, if the President of the United States says the assignment is bipartisan, then it's bipartisan. And not only do you get better policy, in my opinion, but you also get something that's durable. Because what we see now is one side wins, they do their thing on their own. The next team wins, and they tear up what was done, and then they lose, and then the other guys are back, and they tear up what was just, and it's just like this awful cycle where things don't get done, people don't get the help they need, and everyone hates each other. It's got to end. And it ends when you have a new set of national figures that are operating differently, that are saying, no, we are going to do this in a bipartisan way. We may not get full bipartisan support, but that's where we're starting. We're not going to start in a hyper-partisan way. We're going to start in a bipartisan way. And we'll go from there. It may not last, you know, but that's where we're starting.
You've talked about how important this work is to you. You're a husband, you're a father. Do you ever question whether it's worth the risk?
I do not, no. You know, I balance the time, I think, pretty well. I think my kids would tell you that. I think my wife would tell you that. And, you know, I don't know how long I'll be able to do this. But as long as I can do it, I want to have every day count. I want to be able to look back and be like, I got as much done as I possibly could. Last Congress, you know, the most significant thing I think that we did was the Social Security Fairness Act, outside of the big bills that people talk about. And that bill had been sitting in Congress for 25 years. So you have all these retired teachers, police officers, firefighters, letter carriers, people who have been making our lives possible for decades. And they paid into Social Security, but because of some law, they weren't getting all of their Social Security benefits. I dug in, made it my mission to get this thing passed, and you know, even though it had 362 co-sponsors, the speaker wasn't going to bring it to the floor. And we organized a discharge petition. We forced a vote, and I'm glad I got up every day fighting for that. And I did it with this teacher up in Mason or in Warren County, Melissa Johnson, who just kept, you know, she was like me. We were just like it was our mission. And we forced a vote, and then we got a vote in the Senate because we forced that too in a very different way. We forced the majority leader, Chuck Schumer, at the time, to come to a press conference with all these firefighters and police officers and teachers and letter carriers, and he agreed to the vote. And then, you know, we got it done, and now it's law. And, you know, people listening, I can tell you that there are a number of people listening, many, who now get an additional $500, $600, $700 that they paid for in their monthly Social Security check. That comes to us. That gets spent here on goods and services. That will boost our economy. And you're like, okay, well, what's next? Because I want to keep doing those things.
Well, I've been talking with U.S. Representative Greg Landsman, a Democrat representing Ohio's 1st Congressional District. Thanks so much for your time today, Congressman Landsman.
Thank you.
Up next, we'll talk about recent ICE detentions locally. This is Cincinnati Edition.